Judaism has been called the aniconic religion, or the worship system without icons, without images. According to Jewish philosopher Martin Buber, he said the ancient Jews were more ear people than they were eye people. It's an interesting description. They were more auditory than visual. Images distort who God is, so they were people of the book, the revelation that God gave of himself. They were aniconic, without the aid of icons. Now that's interesting in the light of Romans 10:17, which tells us faith comes by hearing, not seeing. Faith comes by hearing.
For decades now, experts have worked to figure out the different kinds of learning styles. It's common for us to say that we are auditory learners, kinesthetic, or visual learners. The interesting thing is that when it comes to God, we almost all long for a visual understanding of him. Maybe it's the centuries worth of art dedicated to biblical scenes, or the strength of our visual culture today, but we all want to see God and not just hear about him. Well, today on Connect with Skip Weekend Edition, Skip Heitzik continues our in-depth study of the Ten Commandments with his series, God's Top Ten. And today we're exploring the Second Commandment, where we see that we should not make any graven image of God. Does that mean the pictures we've seen depicting him are sinful? We'll find out next here on Connect with Skip Weekend Edition. And as we prepare to begin today, I want to invite you to add Skip Heitzik to your social media for regular updates, encouragement, and more. You can like him on Facebook, follow him on Twitter, or add him to your Instagram feed. All those links available at connectwithskip.com, where you can also find out about this month's Connect with Skip special offer.
Ever walk into a movie late? You may never catch up on the plot. Well, same's true of the Bible. Miss the opening book, and you'll have questions all the way through.
Genesis is the foundation. It's the ground floor. If we don't understand the book of Genesis, we won't understand what follows the book of Genesis.
That's Skip Heitzik reminding that our redemption through Jesus' death and resurrection starts in the book of Genesis.
God says to Satan, I will put enmity between you and the woman, between your seed and her seed. It's a promise of the Redeemer. It's the seed plot of the rest of the Bible.
Rediscover the foundation of your faith. In Skip Heitzik's book, you can understand the book of Genesis. Our gift to you when you give $35 or more today to help keep this ministry on the air. Request your copy when you give online securely at connectwithskip.com/offer. Or you can call 800-922-1888. That's 800-922-1888.
We'll spend some time with Skip and his wife, Lenya, in studio after today's teaching. And if you have a Bible close at hand, turn to Exodus chapter 20, verses 4 through 6, as we begin with Pastor Skip.
Well, there were two boys, it seems, they were always in trouble in school. Two brothers. And they were creating so much trouble in their class that their mother decided to bring in the pastor of their church to have a talk with the boys. So he came to their house one day, sat the boys down, and basically the pastor wanted the boys to know that God sees everything that they do and God is not pleased when they misbehave, but he wanted to do it in such a way that the boys would come to their own conclusion. So the pastor started by saying, boys, where is God? And the boys gave no answer. They just sort of looked at the pastor with blank stares. So the pastor got a little more animated and he said, boys, it's a simple question. Tell me, where is God? Again, no answer, no response. Just bright, wide eyes. Third time, the pastor raised his voice, almost yelling now, and said, where is God? And one brother turned to his other brother and said, let's get out of here quick. God's missing, and they think, we did it. Well, that innocent, childlike view of God isn't that much different than some adult's view of God. That is, God is missing from their lives, and they think, let's make an image to remind us or replace God in our lives. Now, you know something about kids. They're very honest when it comes to how they view the world, and they ask very honest questions, and parents become sometimes very uncomfortable with kids' questions like, well, where does God live? Well, how big is God? Well, what does God look like? Does he have a beard? Does he have a scowl on his face? What is he like? Because they want to know. I grew up in a church with lots of images, and I know that I'm speaking to people today who have come out of or have become involved with worship systems that include statues and images and icons, and so I am very sensitive toward that, and I even teach this with some sentimental kind of a feeling because that was my upbringing. But it's very simple, really. What is allowed in worship? And what is not allowed? What about crucifixes and crosses and statues? What if an image or a painting actually helps me focus on God? What's so bad about that? Why is that wrong if it evokes those feelings or reminds me of God? What about a picture that depicts Jesus? What's the big deal about this commandment? Well, let's actually look at the commandment and then we'll make some remarks on it, go through it and teach it. The second commandment begins in the fourth verse. You shall not make for yourself a carved image. Any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and the fourth generations of those who hate me, but showing mercy to thousands to those who love me and keep my commandments. I'd like you to complete in your minds this sentence. I picture God as blank. Now you fill in that blank. I picture God as what? In your minds, you don't have to say it out loud. Because that's precisely what people will do and will say. I picture God not as a just judge, but I picture God as a very benevolent, warm, smiling, tolerant, you can do anything you want kind of a being. Or I picture God as detached and aloof and not really involved in life as we know it. Or I picture God as some mystical being. Or, still others would say, I don't picture God as a him, but a her. I heard that last night on television. A gal said, now when I pray to God, I say to her, such and such. J.I. Packer once said, metal images are simply the consequence of mental images. So people will make images based on what their mental conception is of the God they worship. So that's why I say complete the sentence, I picture God as such and such. Now, let's just by way of review, remember the last couple of weeks we've been going through the Ten Commandments. And we noted that there's two sources of information about God. Number one, revelation. Number two, imagination. And you fall in one of those two camps and one only. Either we take what God said about himself in the revealed word of God and all that we know about the character and nature of God is derived from biblical revelation, or we decide to throw that out and have nothing to do with it, and now we're left with our imagination. I think God is, I picture God as. So it's important as fundamental to go through the Ten Commandments. And this is the second one. If the first commandment says that God is to be worshiped exclusively, then the second commandment would tell us God is to be worshiped correctly. If the first commandment tells us the whom, then the second commandment tells us the how God is to be worshiped. If the first commandment is against false gods, then the second commandment is against false worship of the true God. False worship of the true God. Now, I see really the second commandment as dovetailing beautifully with John chapter 4, where Jesus said to the woman at the well of Samaria, God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in what? Spirit and in truth. God is spirit, and if you want to worship God, who is spirit, you worship him in spirit and in truth. Now, I've decided that we're not going to take this commandment in 1 week, but we want to really understand it, so we're going to break it up in two. And this is part one. Next week, we'll continue it. And there's just a couple of things I'd like to look at with you today. First of all, the prohibition itself, the commandment itself. What does it mean exactly? Second of all, the problem. That is, why do people break this commandment? Why did God think it was so important that it's number two on the top 10? So we want to look at the prohibition and the problem, what it means and why people do it. Go back with me to just the first section of this, verse 4 and just a snippet of verse 5. You shall not make for yourself a carved image. So it necessitates a three-dimensional image, something you're going to derive out of wood or stone. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them. Now, what does that mean? That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? It's pretty easy to understand, but if you'll allow me, I want to flesh this out by taking you back to the Old Testament, just a little bit of something in the New Testament, and then to the modern era and how this is perceived, this prohibition. In the Old Testament, and we're in it, Exodus chapter 20, it's as old as you can get as far as Old Testament. This commandment isn't just given once and thrown out there. It's actually repeated, reiterated, and amplified several times throughout the biblical narrative. We just read the first instance of that in verse 4, 5, and 6. But I want to show you something else. Go with me, the same chapter, to verse 18. Verse 18. Now, the Ten Commandments are done. God gave all ten, but watch this. Now, it's all over, but it says, verse 18. Now, all the people witnessed the thunderings, the lightning flashes, the sound of the trumpet, and the mountain smoking. And when the people saw it, they trembled and they stood afar off. Then they said to Moses, you speak with us and we will hear. But let not God speak with us, lest we die. And Moses said to the people, do not fear, for God has come to test you, that his fear may be before you, so that you may not sin. So the people stood afar off, but Moses drew near the thick darkness where God was. Now watch this. Then the Lord said to Moses, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, you have seen that I talked with you from heaven. Did you get that? He didn't say, you have seen God, but you have seen that I talked with you from heaven. You shall not make anything to be with me, gods of silver or gods of gold, you shall not make for yourselves. So you saw lightning and you heard thunder and you heard my voice speaking, but you saw no form. Okay. Turn to the book of Deuteronomy. And if you don't know where that is, just keep turning right. You'll go down a few blocks. You'll see it. Chapter 4. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 15. Take careful heed to yourselves, for you saw no form when the Lord spoke to you at Horeb, or Mount Sinai, out of the midst of the fire. Lest you act corruptly and make for yourselves a carved image in the form of any figure, the likeness of male or female, the likeness of any animal that is on the earth, the likeness of any winged bird that flies in the air, the likeness of anything that creeps on the ground, the likeness of any fish in the water beneath the earth. Take heed, lest you lift your eyes to heaven, and when you see the sun, the moon, the stars, all the host of heaven, you feel driven to worship them and serve them, which the Lord your God has given to all the peoples under the whole heaven as a heritage. But the Lord has taken you and brought you out of the iron furnace, out of Egypt, to be his people, an inheritance, as you are this day. Okay, same book, go to chapter 27 of Deuteronomy. This is the last one I'll have you turn to. Deuteronomy chapter 27. Now let me set it up. God anticipates they're about to go into the new land, the land of Canaan, the land of promise. And the first thing he says you do when you get there is you go to the middle of the land where there's two mountains and you divide the people up and you read blessings and you read cursings. Now watch this. Verse 12, chapter 27. These shall stand on Mount Gerizim to bless the people when you have crossed over the Jordan, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Joseph, and Benjamin. And these shall stand on Mount Ebal to curse Reuben, Gad, Asher, Zebulun, Dan, and Naphtali. And the Levites shall speak with a loud voice and say to all the men of Israel, cursed is the one who makes a carved or molded image, an abomination to the Lord, the work of the hands of the craftsman, and sets it up in secret. So we see that this second commandment is given and repeated and amplified throughout the Old Testament narrative. Okay. It's equally important to understand Moses' reaction the first time the children of Israel broke this commandment. Remember how he reacted? Remember when he came down the mountain with those Ten Commandments? All shiny, his face is glowing. And he comes down and the people are doing what? They're worshiping a golden calf. And Moses doesn't say, well, to each his own. You remember what Moses did? He broke the commandments. Well, let me read you the verse. This is out of Exodus 32. He cast the tablets out of his hands and broke them. He took the calf which they had made. You can turn to it, but I'm going to be done by the time you get there. He burned it in the fire, ground it to powder, scattered it on the water, and he made the children of Israel to drink it. That's his reaction to the first time they broke the second commandment. He had that bowl, that image that they had made, ground to powder, pulverized, to put it in the water and said, drink up. This is like reversed Alka-Seltzer. You take Alka-Seltzer, it settles your stomach. This would have naturally upset them. I think the message was clear. Idolatry ought to make you sick to your stomach because it certainly is sick in God's eyes. He made him drink it. Well, as time goes on, the 12 tribes of Israel split up, 10 in the north, 2 in the south. And when they break up, a guy by the name of Jeroboam sets up not one, but two golden calves, right? One at Bethel, 11 miles north of Jerusalem, and one in the top of the country at Dan. And he tells the people in the north, these are the gods which brought you out of Egypt. And the Bible says this thing became a sin to the people of Israel. Okay, because of all these verses, all of these instances, Judaism has been called the aniconic religion, or the worship system without icons, without images. According to Jewish philosopher Martin Buber, he said the ancient Jews were more ear people than they were eye people. It's an interesting description. They were more auditory than visual. Images distort who God is. So they were people of the book, the revelation that God gave of himself. They were aniconic without the aid of icons. Now that's interesting in the light of Romans 10, 17, which tells us faith comes by hearing, not seeing. Faith comes by hearing. So that's a thumbnail sketch of the Old Testament's view of this commandment. When we get to the New Testament, there's a little bit of difference. Well, you know, in the Old Testament, I counted the word idol, idols, and idolatry appear 111 times. In the New Testament, they only appear 22 times. And it could all be summed up, you might say, by John, in 1 John chapter 5, verse 21. It's the last verse of that book. He simply says, little children, keep yourselves from idols. Keep yourselves from idols. When Jesus Christ walked this earth and he confronted the Jews in Jerusalem, they had their own view of these commandments, which was very rigid. Now, you know who was the governor of Judea when Jesus was walking around the place? It was Pontius Pilate, right? Well, did you know that there were two instances in Pontius Pilate's career based upon him breaking the second commandment that in part led to the crucifixion of Jesus Christ? You see, he had been governor for 5 years, and then he made a couple of dumb mistakes. Let me tell you about them. First mistake he made was he brought banners, ensigns, into the city of Jerusalem, big signs on poles that had an image of Caesar on the banner. And he marched these through Jerusalem. When the Jewish leaders saw these, they demanded those signs be removed because he violated the second commandment. Now he, Pontius Pilate, wasn't Jewish. What do they care? They cared because it was their city.
Well, there's a lot of history to learn about the Ten Commandments, isn't there? And Skip will continue with that next time when he returns with the second part of this four-part teaching, Have You Seen God Lately? And it's easy to listen to this teaching again or any part of our dynamic study of the Ten Commandments. Find out how and add it to your personal audio library or listen online at connectwithskip.com. And now we have Skip and his wife Lenya in studio today to talk a bit more about this. Lenya?
The teaching today is, Have You Seen God Lately? And people say that the Old Testament can be hard to understand. Do you have any recommendations on how to read the Old Testament for all that it's worth?
There's a great old saying that says, the new is in the old contained, the old is in the new explained. That is, the New Testament is in the Old Testament concealed. The Old Testament is in the New Testament revealed. So if you read the Old Testament, you see shadows. Once you know the New Testament, you see shades and shadows and predictions that are fulfilled in the New Testament. And when you read the New Testament, it puts the bow on it. You have a full understanding. You see what it was all leading to. The Bible was given to us in an interesting way. It's not a systematic theology. It doesn't open up to Genesis 1, this is the teaching and doctrine of God the Father. It doesn't say that. It begins where God speaks and God does and he creates. And then you move on. There's stories and narrative and history and poetry, and it's a mix of literature, and it's enough to keep it interesting, I would say. It's not just all one style. And I think there's a magic and a joy in that God mixed it up.
Well, it's 66 books by I don't know how many authors.
Over 40 authors, right? Written over 1,500 years.
And yet it's all cohesive.
It's cohesive. It's they're all on the same page. They all agree on the most controversial subjects in the world. And there's no book like it because of that. So just saying that is important in and of itself. So just get in and start reading it. But then we have resources as well. One of the best resources, and everywhere I go, people always bring this up.
The Bible. We met someone from Mongolia in Florida that was doing
the Bible from 30,000 feet.
Yeah.
And it resonates with people because it gives people in a year's time the ability to go through all 66 books, or not a year's time. You could do it in a much shorter time. That was just what we did on a weekly basis. But it gives an overview. It's like flying over the United States in an airplane and looking down at the significant structures that you can see from that level without getting caught in the minutiae of it. So you go through it faster, but it gives the overall picture of God's plan from the Old Testament into the New Testament.
Well, thanks, Skip and Lenya. You can find out all about the Bible from 30,000 feet and other great books and resources from Pastor Skip at connectwithskip.com. So why was it such a big deal for people to make a statue depicting God? We'll find out next time as our series, God's Top 10, continues right here in Connect with Skip Weekend Edition, a presentation of Connection Communications.
Make a connection. Make a connection at the foot of the cross. Cast your burdens on his wood. Make a connection. A connection. A connection.
Connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.